Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:31 p.m. Wednesday, August 26th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. This is a public information exchange meeting with Otter Tail Power Company, so welcome. And thank you for taking the time today. Look forward to it. And I don't have any other opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Joanne, it has been forever since I've seen you. It's fun to see you on the screen. Bryce, good to see you, too. I wish you guys were here. I always look forward to these meetings to connect with you folks. But this will do. We'll have to make do with this as long as we need to. But appreciate the time to visit and get an update from you guys today on some of your burning issues. So looking forward to our time together.
Yep. Commissioner Christman, any comments?
No, just also good to see you and look forward to the information. Thanks.
Okay, so I will turn it over to either Bryce or Joanne, whoever is going to present. And then if you want to just introduce the other member, or if anyone else from your team is on the line as well, that would be great.
Bryce, do you want me to take it first?
Yes, please.
Sure. Well, I really appreciate the warm introduction, and likewise, we all wish that we could be there. It's been such a long time since I've had a privilege to see you. I'm grateful that I can at least see you virtually, and just really want to appreciate the time that you're giving Otter Tail Power Company today. I'm really enthused about the information that the team is going to share with you today. At Otter Tail Power, we've embarked on what we're calling Innovation 2030, really preparing our systems, services, options for the future. And so the team has been working on three main tenets that we define as success for the technology that we're exploring: increased safety and reliability, enhancing the customer experience, and increasing efficiencies. And as the team will share with you today, the projects that we are looking forward to sharing with you, and certainly we're hoping that we get feedback and your thoughts on the technologies that we're looking at. These fit squarely within the three tenets that we're focused on: customer, reliability, efficiency. So my goal today would be for us to be able to share with you that the timing's right, and to move forward on these projects, and that there's benefit for our customers, for our employees, and we're still going to be able to keep rates low and do things the Otter Tail Power way, which is, you know, focusing on our customers, and so they can rely on us and trust that we're doing things the right way. So with us today, we've got, you're all familiar with Bryce Hulgen, manager of our regulatory rates area. And then we also have LK Grits. Al is leading this project. You're probably all familiar with Al. He did just a smash-up job on leading the Big Stone South to Ellendale multi-value 345 kV transmission project. And then we also have Mike Reber. Mike is also on my team. He's manager of our system infrastructure and reliability area, which is really focusing on the wires and technology piece of the asset management area under my accountability. So these team members, in addition to many more back here in Fergus Falls and throughout our system, have been really engaged on exploring these options, again, focusing on projects that we can do to increase safety and reliability, enhancing our customer experience and expectations, and then increasing efficiencies for our employees and the systems that we operate. So without further ado, I think Bryce is going to kick off our presentation, and we would just really encourage, we really are looking forward to the dialogue that we'll have with you, because you always ask us good questions and make us think hard, and that's what's going to help us to deliver better products. So Bryce, take it away, please.
Sure. I should just ask, I have the presentation in front of me, and you have it available also, commissioners and staff.
I can make you the presenter, Bryce, and then we can see your screen if you want.
I don't believe. Do you have it?
I don't have a copy of it.
Either way, I can just reference the slides as well. Either way, whichever you prefer.
Okay. Yeah. Why don't you, Matt, if you can make Bryce the presenter, then we can see.
All right. You are now the presenter. You should be able to share your screen.
Okay, is that coming across okay?
Yep.
Looks good.
Very good. Thanks. Well, it's really helpful when the technology works well at the time. This is great. On slide two, I guess we already had introductions, so but as our agenda here today, provide some more background on our customers, our customer service territory. Wow. What we're hearing from our customers, and then we're going to discuss some of the ways we're looking to address needs and improve. We've got a list of the participants on the call here today. And so Joanne and Bruce have been involved in the development projects and serve as our executive sponsors. So they're the chaperones here today. and then the rest of the list of us here is on the screen here, and thanks for the introductions, Joanne. We serve Otter Tail serves customers in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota over roughly 70,000 square miles. The average population of the 422 communities we serve is 400 people, and our retail sales are roughly 40% in North Dakota, 10% in South Dakota, and then 50% in Minnesota. And this map shows the largest towns that we serve, as well as our generation facilities. And you'll notice on the map here, we've got a couple of new generation facilities coming online here later this year with the Maricourt Wind Project just south of Jamestown there, as well as we've got the Astoria Station Project, the natural gas plant in Astoria that will be coming on at the end of this year. And so we're excited to have those coming online, and that makes our map look a little bit different.
Hey, Bryce.
Yes.
This is Randy. I didn't see it on the slide, but I was writing down. Did you say about 40% North Dakota, 50% Minnesota, and 10% South Dakota? Did I write those down right?
That's correct. Yep,
okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
Yep, 40, 10, and 50. Yep, that's right. And we do have, so in North Dakota, we serve 224 communities on the eastern portion of the state. And that's about 60,000 customers. In total, we have about 132,000 customers in our service territory. We know with our customers, I mean, customers want low rates, they want reliable service, and they want useful information easily available on outages and restoration efforts, as well as timely usage information. And we know these things because this is what we get calls about. This is what consistently show up when we have customer surveys, whether those surveys are through paper or phone call surveys by us or through something like a J.D. Power. And what we're talking about today addresses these needs and keeps these things in mind, the low rates, reliable service, and the useful information readily available. On the first one with low rates, our rates are about 25% lower than the national average. This chart here is based on data from the biannual EEI typical bill survey. It's based on summer months here. And you can see where our rates have averaged over the last 12 years. Our rates are low by design. We consider impact to reliability of service. And keeping our rates at some of the lowest in the nation in really everything we do. And we've done so as we've listened to our customers look for ways to provide better service through infrastructure improvements and optimizing our business operations. And it's always a balance of when and how it makes the most sense to spend money. The things we discussed today keep us on the same track to maintaining those low average rates. And think with that, we'll have Al move into our existing infrastructure and some of the ways we've identified to improve those.
Yeah. Say, Bryce.
Yes.
What do you attribute that to other than, and it's a big other than, just a commitment to keeping rates low? That's really an impressive graph compared to the peers, if you will, that we regulate as well. That's quite a difference. And how do you make that work consistently?
Sure. I think one really good example of what we're doing is, the big project we're talking about today is advanced metering infrastructure. And you may be familiar that there's advanced meter reading, or AMR project. There's some technology that came out in the 15 to 20 years ago where we assess that and we try to figure out, does this make sense for our customers, for us? What kind of business optimization do we get out of that, and what does it look like in the future for us? And maybe we would have liked to have that automated meter reading 15 years ago. It just did not quite fit the mold for where we wanted to spend dollars at the time. And so I think that's one of the things that we've done well is assessed. And I think sometimes it gets tricky because we maybe are on the tail end of some of these. We wait for innovation to be a little bit more mature, probably. And I think that's one of the things that has helped us maintain the low rates.
Mm-hmm. And one other quick question. This was July going back to 2006. Is that what I'm looking at?
Right. So, what's provided here is like a July 2019. That would be information, so it'd be based on our rates as of June 30th of 2019, and then applied to our sales for the prior 12-month period.
Okay. So that's a full.
This would be based on summer rates. Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So, Al, I think I'll turn over to you for some of our existing infrastructure.
Say, Bryce, before we move on from that last question, this is Bruce Gerritsen, by the way, and I think you have to compliment your technology people for remembering to shut off my video, but they neglected to shut off my microphone. So there's room for improvement, but
Matt's going to hear about that later, Bruce.
I should also comment on that last illustration in the this really is at the top of our mission statement. This is our differentiating feature. We hold our price differential to be near and dear to us. We celebrate it. Our customers, we hope, celebrate it. It is a driving force in our business. The kind of scrutiny that we put into something like you're going to look at today, I think Bryce illustrated it well. We scrutinize spending money like you wouldn't believe. And the goal is that when we do spend money, we want it to be beneficial to the rates overall over time. Obviously, we have to maintain a reliable system and other things, and so we are not going to compromise on those things. But we have been very careful to, guard our resources well. Joanne, I don't know if you want to comment too.
Well, I can say this. I would like to clone you. And I would like to see the other two be closer to your numbers. Again, I think it's really an impressive graph. Thank you. On behalf of the ratepayers, that means a lot to them.
Well, we'll keep working on that. Joanne, unfortunately, now her microphone is
there. I turned it off. My apologies. I guess I'm technologically... just to build upon that, Bruce, what immediately came to my mind is, as I think on my 22 plus years at Otter Tail Power Company, a lot of our success really stems to our core values, and the one that immediately came to mind was resourcefulness. we have done some amazingly innovative things to keep rates low, but still bridge some technologies. And it's really the, you know, I think many of you are familiar, we've done some pretty innovative first mover things, even in the FERC regulatory arena as well, to our control area services and operations tariff is an example. We were the first in the nation to do that and recognize that we were providing services to other entities in our local balancing area, and that it wasn't appropriate that our customers should subsidize that. So we, you know, figured out the appropriate allocation of those costs so that the right customers were paying the right costs. And those are things that don't just come strictly by luck. It's, you know, I think while many times our size were challenged because, you know, we need the same technology as the very large customers that have so, or large companies that have so many more customers to spread those costs over, whereas we have a smaller customer base and still very common technologies still cost the same, but we do it innovatively and resourcefully. And I think that just speaks to the heart of who OTP is. And we're proud of being resourceful. Not everyone necessarily is, but by golly, we're proud of it. And we're proud when we learned from, you know, our grandmas telling us about the dirty 30s and things that they had to do to, make it. And we're resourceful, and I'm really proud of that. And I think you'll hear some of that resonate through the presentation from the team.
Thank you.
All right, this is Al Capritz. Hopefully you can still hear me well. I put my headset on because I always have a little hard time hearing myself. So.
You sound good, Al.
Perfect. I would like to be clear, though, Bruce, I didn't mean to clone you. I meant to clone, Otter Tail Power Company. So I just wanted to be clear on that one.
Right.
So here's a picture. We're just showing, you know, where our system is at today. We mentioned electromechanical meters. We do have solid-state meters that are out there as well. But on the metering front, Otter Tail Power still, to this day, reads every meter manually. So we have approximately 115 of our own employees that are out reading meters, and then we do contract some of that work as well in some of our larger communities. So with all that, you know, we really are looking at, like, how can we improve what we're doing, and how can we make sure we're delivering value to our customers. And as we explore the automated or advanced metering infrastructure project, you know, one of the things that we continually look at is what is the right technology for us, and making sure that we select that right technology without being too overboard, and yet achieving the results that that work best for our customers and us as a power company as well. So you can imagine that this, as noted there, requires us to travel across our territory to every meter at each location. And so that takes a fair amount of time and costs a fair amount for us to achieve that meter reads every month.
Al?
Yes.
I'd have to sit and think through the math, but that number seems surprising, 115 employees. Is that 115 employees that do a bunch of other things too, but on certain days they go read some meters? Or
yes.
There's not 115 full-time.
That's our service rep staff.
Okay.
And there's probably a few of those that don't do meter reading on a monthly basis, but the majority of those do read some meters every month.
Okay. Thanks.
Next slide, please. So this is just a picture of our service territory, and you know what we're really trying to just show here is that we do have a very large service territory, as you're well aware. 70,000 square miles, and we have approximately 130,000 customers in that 70,000 square miles. And because every customer doesn't just have one meter, we have approximately 170,000 meters as well. So as you look at that, you can imagine, as mentioned on the previous slide, just the amount of time we have to spend traveling from place to place. Not only to read meters, but to do potentially a check read if there's a customer may have a concern about their bill for a month, or a customer moves out or a customer moves in, or in the unfortunate event, we might have a disconnect that has to take place. So all of those activities require a person to specifically travel to the meter location and take the appropriate action, whatever it might be for the issue at hand. So as we look at this, you know, we really are thinking about how do we become strategic in our approach and become more efficient in those meter-related activities. So this slide here is pretty interesting, if you would. We asked one of the AMI vendors that we're working with right now to tell us if they had information regarding meter reading, advanced meter reading situations in North Dakota. And their information indicated that all the distribution co-ops in the state, except the two white areas here, have some sort of advanced meter reading or automated meter reading systems out there. And since we're so rural in nature, but we're clusters of these communities out there, you can see that pretty much all of our customers are bordered by generally an REA that has some sort of automated meter reading. And as well, there's municipals that are out there and MDU serving the Bismarck area and XL and their larger communities as well all have some sort of meter reading system that is in place.
Al,
one of the things that comes to my mind as I look at this is that I really feel like we're in an excellent position. Joanne kind of mentioned this, I believe, is not always being the early adopter into some thing that might be coming to the market. And as we've looked at this, we can see that things have been in place for 15 or 20 years with some of these systems. And now, there's just new technologies coming out with advanced metering infrastructure. And we're really poised in a good place to take advantage of those new technologies that are coming out. And yet at the same time, because the systems have been in place for a while, they've also improved themselves, not just on the technology side of it, but just operationally as well. So as we think about this, we really feel like we're in a good place and time to be executing an advanced metering infrastructure project. So this slide here is just attempting to show, kind of the manual process that we undergo right now to go through our meter reading. And then the bottom up area there is what we would expect to achieve through an advanced meter infrastructure project. So it's a little bit somewhat backwards maybe, but you have to look at it from right to left. And you see on the right-hand side, it kind of all starts with our customer information system. And that feeds a file to our energy management team, which then actually has to look through that, make sure all that data is accurate, and pass it to our multi-vendor reading system. That then downloads to each of our handheld devices. And then our team, most of it out-of-town employees, but some contracted as well, as I mentioned, then have to manually go out and read all of these meters across our system. So the goal, 170,000 meters get read every month through that process. And then we bring that back. We dock it. We dock that handheld device at their, sometimes it's their home, it's their office, sometimes it's a warehouse, but it gets docked. Comes back to our team in our energy information system area. They then actually have to do our own validating, editing, and estimation and make sure the data all looks accurate, and then upload that to a location where our CIS system can then read it and do its own validation before it produces the bill. So that's just, you know, the basics of getting the meter reading schedule pushed out and the meter readings back again. But outside of that, we have also other manual processes that deal with things like unbilled revenue that is a challenge on a monthly basis. And then working through that process that we continue to work on. So when we think about it, we don't just look at, you know, it's not only going to improve what we do in the field, but it's also going to improve efficiencies in our back office, and hopefully, as part of it as well, we believe it will improve our relationships with our customers to have ongoing access to their meter information so that if they have a question, our customer service reps will be able to go right to their basically real-time data and look at that information and answer questions directly for any customer issue that may come up. So we're excited about this. We see not only efficiencies and improvements within what we're doing at Otter Tail Power, but we do truly believe that this will improve our relationships with our customers as well. And so really on the bottom part of the screen there, all that's showing is our system will be automated if we go through the advanced green infrastructure process. And with all that, we're not naive enough to say, oh, we'll never have to have anybody interview whatsoever. There's always going to be little things that come up along the way. We'll have people that are watching out for those exceptions and managing those as well.
Ultimately, it looks like you will have fewer employees or, you know, in some instances, contractors, I think is how you described it, just because of the rollout period occurring over an extended period of time, I'm assuming. Would any FTE reductions basically be dealt with through attrition?
Yeah, our customer service team has really done a great job looking at where we improve in efficiencies and how we would manage the employee situation. And you're right, definitely that's our plan, is any attrition, any reductions would be through attrition.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. I think, bar any other questions, I think Mike's got the next slide in the slide deck.
Okay, great. Thanks, Al. Again, my name is Mike Reaver. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yes.
Very good. As Joanne noted, I manage our system infrastructure and reliability team. And today, you know, just going to talk through a little bit processes related to outages and how we respond as an organization to outages and then with our customers. So on this screen here, and I won't read through it word for word, but at the end of the day, we're taking information during an outage, whether it be phone calls, maybe devices on the system, sensors, and things like that. And then in each step that you see on the screen, we're trying to decipher that through emails and text and phone, and then respond to that issue. And so each step here is complexity, and that complexity leads to an opportunity to improve in both reliability and then communications to our customers as well during these outages. So today's processes, it will review, you know, our ones during outages, we're looking to improve both on efficiency, which will improve reliability, but then also information to our customers as well. On the next slide, you know, and Joanne touched on it as part of our Innovation 2030 initiative. There's some technology that's been evolving in the industry, and similar to AMI, how we went from kind of bypassing AMR, automated meter reading, we're almost moving from an outage management system to a more of an advanced distribution management system, which is the latest tool available in the industry. And both of these tools at the end of the day are taking the data we just talked about and deciphering it and putting it into more actionable intelligence for us to communicate both to our internal employees to respond to outages, but then also to our customers as well. So we're seeing that over time, our processes have served customers well, but now as we look at within the roadmap of the technology improvements this system and these tools are right for tackling now. So we've done some groundwork on some of the foundational systems. GIS, for one, is a large system that is very impactful and foundational to a well-functioning outage management system, as well as CIS and staking. And if we wanted, we could spend a lot of time on those. But at the end of the day, we're seeing a good opportunity and a good time to move forward with some of these tools here in front of us. The next slide is just highlighting that same piece where we're taking information in the field from sensors, from substations, from phone calls, maybe AMI if that's in place at a certain period in time, and deciphering it in what's shown there as the control center. But that's our decision support system, or the ADMS or OMS. And so that's where we can take all that information and then dispatch crews and respond to outages more quickly for our customers, but then also take that and communicate with our customers. Things like estimated restoration time, crew en route, crew on scene, other communications of the like during an outage that customers are interested in. This slide is pointing to what we have today for communicating with customers. That's a picture of our outage map that's posted on our website. And you can see the text on how that's populated today. And certainly with an outage management system, and today now the tool is more commonly known as advanced distribution management system, that information would then all flow into something we would publish to customers. You could, within a website, within any channel that they might request, and Bryce will get into some of that here upcoming in a few slides. And I think one good example to think about, you know, if you're driving down the interstate and you got your Google map, you might come across an accident. Your phone, before you even know it's there, is going to tell you, hey, here's a route that can save you 10 minutes. And so as customers have those interactions with their banks and hospitals and their Google Maps, just requesting and that desire for more information during outages is something that we see very valuable to customers, and this is how we would give that to them. So at the end of the day, an ADMS system, there's two core pieces really that we'd be looking to improve, and that's reliability and restoration times. So both reliability near term, but then also an outage management, or ADMS, provides us with a lot of information about our system that we can use for long-term planning. And then for our customers, this system would provide us a large improvement in our ability to communicate to customers during times of outage restoration. That was pretty quick. I'm certainly open to questions here. Otherwise, I'll turn it back over to Bryce.
Mike, I have a question. This is Julie. Does this type of a system lend itself to incorporating DERs down the road, or having sort of that back and forth communication tool from customers if they were to have some distributed, say, solar panels or something on their own home? Or what would this be a stepping stone to that, or would that next level require even a different investment?
Yeah, that's a great question. I appreciate the question. It's a good lead in, I guess, in terms of an outage management system. You know, it's maybe a more traditional technology would not. But as we look at where we're at in the industry, an advanced distribution management system has various modules within it. And so DER, or a distribution management system, which includes DER communications and visibility, is a part of an overall advanced distribution management system, along with other smart grid components as well, whether it's volt VAR optimization or CVR, another term. So at the end of the day, by putting in a foundational ADMS, you can then start to turn on these various modules as they become more of a need for our customers.
All right, great. Thank you. So who's going to talk about price on both of these?
I did that one.
Who is that?
Versus microphone isn't going to work during that part, I bet. So, yeah, just a couple more slides before we do get into the price side of things. Here I'm just sharing an example of customer bill right now to illustrate that we currently see a gap in the availability of information for customers from a usage perspective. In the case of this bill that we're showing here, the date is it's a June 2nd bill, and some of the usage was from as far back as April 29th. And so we see that as an information obstacle for customers, and actually maybe not as much an obstacle, but actually just that the information just does not exist to make timely decisions. And this is one of the things that we hear on phone calls. Why is my bill so much higher this month? And a customer service representative would look and say, well, your usage is doubled, and the customer will say, oh yeah, well, I installed name a thing and didn't know that it was used that much. And it's not that the information will eliminate those calls, but it will provide an avenue for customers to monitor and make adjustments more quickly, giving greater customer control in the current system.
Are you saying that'll happen through the bills or through them signing up to look at their usage online?
Yes, I'm saying that it would be more readily available through online resources.
Okay.
And I'm slow walking into what brings this all together, so I'll move into the advanced metering infrastructure.
But just a minute, before you go to that, based on isn't the partial answer the previous question, though, the automated reading would, I presume, eliminate this business of having a bill that goes out for 20 days one month and then 40 days the next month. I presume with automated reading, it would be the same day all the time. And so that would take out some of that situation where people have sticker shock when they get their bill.
Yes, that's a very good point. Thanks for making that. I think, was it a couple of weeks ago that we were in and we were talking about extending the amount of time for actual eyes on meters? We have some meters that are behind or in buildings, and so during this the COVID-19 stuff, we're not in and getting our eyes on those meters. And this is something we look at with the AMI system, where the meter reading would be automated, and we could address that issue as well. So yes, length of time for usage period for bill, as well as just automating the meter reading.
And speaking of the meters that are inside the homes right now that you're not able to get to, I do appreciate the supplemental information that. That was a much smaller number than I thought it might be, or was under the impression, for whatever reason, that it was significantly more, but appreciate those numbers.
Yes, you're welcome. Thanks. Thanks for the follow-up. Yeah. So I guess as to why we talk about these. Oh, sorry, does someone have another question? I sorry to cut you off.
No, I don't believe so.
As to why we talk about these projects together, then, the AMI, that's really the largest dollar amount, but we think about the metering infrastructure and outage management facilities, and really the ADMS, not just outage management, like Mike and Commissioner Gorchek were just talking about. But those are the information gatherers. And then the customer preference center, the third bullet point here, which is what I'm going to talk about next, really brings this information all together and provides insights for customers and also provides some of the detail of information. But really, it's the insights and that information being available in real time or near real time. Right here we've researched several of these preference centers, and we don't have one that sticks out to us as a clear favorite. I think that's going to end up being dependent on our review of the AMI and ADMS products and what might be available with our chosen vendor there. But this shot here just provides an idea of what we'll see and get with the preference center. Things like outage notifications and usage information. You can see on this one that a customer could put a usage threshold alert on their account, receive an email or text alert for that information, in addition to having access online. But so what I think about that, when I think about that, for instance, like a customer, we send out notifications or information to customers about past month's usage and how usage is going. But if a customer averages 1,000 kilowatt hours a month, maybe it'd be appropriate to put on a notification that say if they hit 1,100 kilowatt hours that they get an email text. Not something that you really want to get every month probably, but something that might be informative, like in a cold February or something like that. And we don't know what we may ultimately end up with for the customer preference center, but want to provide this as an idea, as a sample of what it does. And really moving on to this slide, what we expect to get out of the customer preference center is that it summarized the data provided by AMI, ADMS, and all of the loads and modes of data that I talked about getting with these systems, and meets our customers' expectations for information, not only on outages and restoration efforts like Mike was mentioning, but also on the usage. And so that's all the intro then to the review of the timing and the cost estimates. So here we have the expected timing for advanced metering infrastructure, advanced distribution management system, and the customer preference center, and the estimated costs. And these are total companies numbers. So we would, for North Dakota, like North Dakota, would be about 40% of these. We're currently in the process of reviewing AMI vendor proposals to assess the cost and how this infrastructure could be constructed and deployed. We expect that we could have a preferred vendor selected within the next few months and would then begin honing in on the contract particulars. This would lead to an expectation that we would look at a pilot of the AMI project starting probably about a year from now, so Q3 of 2021. The pilot would last for about a year. We put in a few thousand meters and setting up all the backbone infrastructure to make it work and testing it out. And then full deployment would occur starting in the latter part of 2022, probably starting in Q4. And then the full deployment would last about 24 months to replace the 170,000 meters. We expect the project costs, where we don't have that fully available yet. We're looking to be in that $50 to $60 million range. And I'll show the next slide too what that means for a revenue requirement.
Well, will that get into the time frame in terms of depreciating that out? Or if not, what do you typically use for a depreciation schedule on
sure.
something like this?
Yeah, so for the meters, just roughly, the actual meters are probably $35 million of our current estimate, and then the rest would be other software, hardware, infrastructure, backbone type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the meters would be depreciated that they'd have a 20-year life. Some of the things that we're looking at right now with the various bids are, Are we sure that we're okay in 5 years, that we're not missing out on new technologies or updates, upgrades, things that we might have available? So future-proofing type things. So 20 years on the meters. Some of the hardware and software, I mean, most of that is like a 5-year depreciable life.
Okay, so about 60% though would be, or 70% would be tied to meters. Well, 60 to 70%.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Just the 35 million over the 60. Yeah. Yep. Part of over 50. Yes.
Okay, and that's a 20-year, and then the balance, the software, et cetera, would be 5-year.
Yep. That's right. Al, did I get that pretty spot on, or did I miss part of that?
No, that's that's reasonable, and I'm sure everybody appreciates the fact that it's not just the hardware part of the meters, it's the whole installation and everything else that goes with it. So just making sure that that's clear. But yeah, $35 million for all of that, and then the balance, as mentioned.
Can you provide any information, even rough estimates, to how much the AMI will save you in terms of costs of not having to have on-the-ground meter readers?
Yes. Yep. So I think that probably is pretty good to bring us into this next slide. We have a 20-year time frame on the slide, and then it's in the graphs in millions of dollars here. And we're sitting on year 2020 right now on the far left, looking at vendor selection to determine exactly what the project and deployment will look like. And so I think the green line here on the graph represents the net revenue requirement that we look at over the 20-year life here. This takes into consideration the cost of the project through the components list at the bottom, which includes, so on the legend there, the far left, the O&M would be the net O&M impact. And as you can track on this chart, the deployment phase is expected to start in late 2022 and go for about 24 months to replace all 170,000 meters. There's a few things happening in those early deployment years. We have the cost of the project, which includes the metering infrastructure and installation, all those things. And then there's various benefits of the project that won't fully be realized in the early stages. Things like the handheld meter replacements, meter reading costs, and other costs that don't all go away on day one. But I think that O&M portion is what Commissioner Fedorchuk, you're asking about, of what types of savings would we see overall O&M-wise. And that's what would be reflected in that part of the graph.
And I don't have my glasses, so I can't see the graph real well. But what is the black squares that kind of go right above the green line throughout?
Yep. The black squares represent the numbers for the net revenue requirement. So like 2023, that 7.1 in the black square, that's the peak of the revenue requirement for this project. And then as it trails out to year 2042, we see that net revenue requirement becomes a credit of in that $5 to $6 million range.
So in total, how much does it save over the course of the 20 years? Looks like it saves substantially.
I'm going to have to look for that, Al, unless your photographic memory remembers that number.
Yeah, we've been talking about a number of different numbers in our organization over time. So on the gross side, let me find that number for you, Commissioner, so I'll make sure I quote the right number there. But on a yearly basis, just on meter reading, we're with today's dollars, we're expecting about a $7 million benefit a year from the meter-related tasks, primarily meter reading. But let me find that gross number for you. Or if you want it in that present value, you can get that for you as well.
While you dig for that.
Maybe it would be beneficial. I forget the precise number, but we do have a favorable benefit to cost ratio that might be informative too, if you readily recall what that worked out to be.
Yeah, it's just slightly over one. About one, like 1.05 or so is what the net present value benefit to cost ratio would indicate. We're, from a project perspective, honestly, I feel like we're pretty excited about it because, it does provide a benefit to our customers over time, and it's a good story to tell.
So when
I couldn't resist throwing that in because it, just brought me back to the days when Jerry, Lean, and I were working on the MVPs and looking for benefits for North Dakota. So I just had to bring that benefit to cost ratio back into the conversation.
It reminded me of my prior life.
I did find, there's some of our bad rent that I know that we calculated at 78 million. In our net present costs, we've calculated at 74 million. And as you would understand, appreciate, you know, we have some replacement costs in there, future, you know, all those future costs as well. So I feel like organizationally, with our consultant that's worked with us on this, we've really, really deliberately at coming up with what the reasonable values are. And maybe just one last point on benefits. We've really skinned this down to land on the benefits that we feel pretty solid on. You know, we don't have kind of, if you would, mythical, hey, we're going to disrupt or be able to do without another, 70 people or something like that because of all these business efficiencies. We really narrowed that down and been very practical and I would say conservative in our approach to what we're calling a benefit, to make sure that we are, very deliberate and focused on just what was mentioned earlier, serving our customers and keeping our rates low. So we're pretty happy with where we're at.
What's the life expectancy on this?
Yeah.
I know it depreciates out to 2042, but how long do they typically last?
So, we've heard of varying different perspectives from different people that have deployed advanced metering. Some are saying 15 years. We have a long history of running our facilities, beyond what a lot of people do. And that's why, as I mentioned earlier, we're focused on trying to future-proof the best we can. But in our RFPs that have been issued to the vendors, we've asked for a 20-year life on everything that we've talked with them about. So we are expecting to get 20 years out of it. And a lot of the vendor responses continue to talk about how they are ensuring that it's kind of a no meter left behind or no system left behind scenario where they are actually saying, hey, we've had meters out there 10 or 15 years already, and we continue to get readings from them and service them and those kinds of things. So
in this revenue requirement table, it kind of reflects the 20-year life expectancy of the meters, or the 20-year depreciation schedule, But you said that of the total $50 to $60 million cost, I can't remember what amount, but that was a little over half the cost for the meters, and the hardware and software was a little less than half, and that has only a 5-year depreciation schedule. So I presume that kind of reflects a life expectancy somewhere around 5 years too. So does this reflect another investment in 5 years in hardware and software, and then again at year 10 and again at year 15? Or are those expected costs that are not reflected at all in this table?
Just going to say, in years 20, 23, where you see the 7.1 million there, that really the blue color of depreciation, that's reflecting that larger 5-year depreciable life of those. And so it's reflected there. There is not another investment in the hardware where in year 2028 in this chart, but the costs associated with like licensing fees for that software and those types of things, those would be in the net O&M costs. And Al, maybe I'll let you want to elaborate more than that on that.
No, I don't really have more to elaborate on that. I mean, we, as you mentioned, Bryce, we've definitely included future cost expenses and capital costs in our estimates. So that was all I was going to say.
That sounded like two different answers, that there's not anything for 5 years. I can't imagine that this hardware and software is going to last throughout this, that there's not going to be significant changes as you adopt innovation. There's costs that go along with that.
Yes, that's that's correct. And I think I guess if you just back of the envelope and you say $35 million is related to the meters and $20 million is related to the software. Some of that $20 million is related to just getting it installed in the first place. So, Alan, I'm not sure if we've got those exact dollars of in that 5 or 10 year range. You know, I don't know what the software upgrade is at that point, and if that reflected exactly in there.
Well, there are a lot of there are so many questions and variables in terms of, you know, as a part of the agreement, how long do you get support before you actually have to pay for support? It never seems to last for an extended period of time. I'd actually be surprised if you could get more than 5 years of support. But then you have software upgrades that extend, you know, beyond that. But it sounds like that you said that was worked into the future O&M cost.
Right. Yes. And as a part of all that, you know, it's, as you guys I'm sure are well aware, there's a lot of organizations that are vetting out software as a service and what the best opportunities are for each company and how we best can serve our future needs and our customers as well. So that's part of our ongoing review. Obviously, getting the infrastructure into the field is a big piece of it. As we've talked about, but then we need to focus on what's our least cost opportunities for the software and hardware side of it, you know, related to operating the system itself. So there's a number of things that we're still working through that way. As I mentioned, we've just gotten back the original, the first pass on the AMI side of it, which would be all the field pieces. And we're looking at that right now, and we continue to work through that selection process kind of through the end of 2020.
Hey, Al and Bryce, I think I just want to make sure that we are very crisply answering Commissioner Christman's question. I mean, these are the costs for this entire period to the best of our ability to estimate. There aren't additional costs that aren't represented here. They will become more refined. But those kinds of continuing licensing costs are built into the O&M, the net O&M, meaning that kind of royal blue or whatever it is below the line. Is that right?
Yes.
So, in other words, we're not expecting another sort of tranche of investment at the end of, you know, beginning in 28.
Nothing beyond what we've already modeled here. This is right. We've accurately reflected what we know today to include that information.
So I just wanted to make patently clear that this is the financial impact we expect over this entire period. And I hope we've explained ourselves. There is an expectation that we'll continue to pay licensing over the period in order to keep everything working. But there won't be an additional round of investment there. Okay, I think we can move on. Maybe we got the point, but there were some complicated questions and some complicated answers. I wanted to be very precise. This is what we expect to happen.
Thanks, Bruce. And just the only clarifier I have for you is that color is ocean blue.
Who didn't know that?
I wouldn't have known that except for I picked again, I mean, we see the benefits of AMI is that it makes economic sense and understanding the questions that discussion we just had. But it makes economic sense over the life of the meter and provides for the opportunity for real-time usage data. With the thought that we'd eventually be able to develop time differentiated rate options for our customers. And the meter level data will also improve our reliability. As to why we think we have it now is the right time, we've talked today about the importance of low rates of reliable service and the customer communications or notifications. The implementation of these projects is part of our overall company initiative to improve the business, helps us accomplish all three of these goals. It's time to update the current systems in place as they really are at end of life. The Edison Foundation Institute for Electric Innovation, they estimate that more than 70% of all meters will be smart meters by the end of 2020. And that's not specifically all AMI meters, it just means between AMR and AMI smart meters, 70% of all meters in the United States will be smart meters by the end of 2020. While we feel like we've done well in foregoing your other technology upgrades, like an advanced metering reading system, it's now time to move into the AMI system with the basic functions being matured. And we now feel comfortable that the systems are designed in a way to allow them to be utilized for the foreseeable future. So we appreciate the chance to share with you what we're working through, and we're happy to be at the point to share economic solutions that will improve our service as we evaluate some of the limitations of our current systems and operations. And we were looking today to get some feedback from you and some initial thoughts on what we're looking to do. And what we see as our next step for us is to look to make some sort of recovery filing to you for AMI. That could be made in the early part of the fourth quarter of this year. That exact filing is something we hope this conversation will help inform and provide some discussion points to have with Victor and Jack ahead of it being made. And ultimately, we'll be seeking authorization to recover either through a rate case or another recovery mechanism. And happy to continue the conversation as you see fit here today or going forward. And this completes the that we compiled for this afternoon. And the time and the discussion.
I think you wrap it up very well on the AMI at the end, because I fear we're starting to exhaust the limit in terms of what we can ask having dialogue additional dialogue or further dialogue when a filing hasn't been made yet. So I think conceptually I like the direction you're going. It looks like it's a benefit to customers, and I think it's just a necessary component, and it spills into other areas that things will change over the next several decades considerably. So I think it's on the right track, but questions I'd probably be more apt to ask you right now, I'm hesitant to ask until a formal process is in place.
I have a high level one for now.
Yeah.
So I don't want to cast stones at small towns. I'm a small town guy. But the reality is the farms and ranches that cover a lot of the area that Otter Tail serves are getting larger. As society changes, more and more people are retiring to other places than their hometown. There's a lot of those towns that are shrinking and probably are going to continue to shrink. So I don't know what the math comes out to. Is what are these meters, a couple hundred dollars a piece or something? Is it your thought as you think about going forward with a project like this that just every customer is treated alike, every house would get a new meter? Or since you're planning on not having a big layoff and reducing your meter reading team through attrition, do some of the small old houses that are unlikely to attract new tenants in the future continue on with what they had for a few years and also fade away through attrition. Maybe attrition's not the right word, but when the home is just no longer used.
Hi, this is Al. As we have looked at this, you know, we're considering a lot of different things, and that would certainly be one of them. I think, I don't know how many times I've said to Joanne, what about Wing, North Dakota? I used to be an engineer for Otter Tail up in Rugby, and that was part of my area that I traveled was, down to Wilton and west to Garrison and Marshall and all those areas out there. And so we're very deliberate in our thoughts as we consider these communities, as you mentioned, or these residences, as you mentioned. As we've looked at the partial deployment, we've generally come to the conclusion that it doesn't probably pay out for us overall and all of our customers if we try to do just partial deployment here and there and still have people out that are reading meters. And so as we've looked at it and our ability to achieve the savings through the attrition part of it, it really looks like we need to kind of move forward with everybody getting a smart meter, an AMI meter, and so that's what we've been looking at. But I can assure you, we definitely have had a lot of conversations about issues like that and making sure that we're doing the right thing.
And I think another consideration is. You know, one, we hope our customers choose to stay in the towns we serve in North Dakota, but totally understand that. I mean, that's sadly a continuing trend in North Dakota, but the meters can be moved as well. So if grandma moves out of Wing, North Dakota, that meter doesn't have to be just thrown away. We can bring it back into our meter shop and employ it as new customers do enter our system. So it's not a wasted investment either. So that's another consideration. And maybe just a little bit finer point on the service reps. So currently our service reps perform all kinds of functions. They're the person located in the communities that we serve. So they're the first direct interface with the customer. They're the first responders to various distribution level outages. They're the ones looking at the trees and calling in saying, hey, we need to, get some trees trimmed here, they have a whole variety of roles. And so the meter reading is a small portion of their day-to-day, month-to-month, year-to-year tasks. So our customer service area has taken a very, very intentional, deliberate look at how we can reduce, still retain the coverage that's so critical for our customers and our service territory to be responsive to outages, but yet offset the costs for the investment of AMI. So that has been a strategic look at those FTEs. So it's actually a relatively small number of FTEs that we need to achieve to offset these costs. And then we'll just look at reallocating certain functionality as those under it move or retire through attrition. And there may be some instances where we'll need to do a little bit more automation or shuffling of employees to ensure that we still have that proper level of coverage. And then, so I didn't want you taking away that we were going to be reducing our FTEs by 155. There's still a lot of functionality that our service reps perform.
Yeah, I that was clear to me before, at least. So, but thanks. The other thing, as you would look at possible manufacturers of meters that would do the kinds of thing you're talking about, is that a list of two or three or dozens, or what kind of world of advanced metering solutions is out there?
Yeah, there's a pretty good list without speaking to the ones that we've actually asked to bid on the project. A few of them would include Aclara, Census, Honeywell, Landis and Gear. Itron. Those are the ones off the top of my head that that are probably more the industry leaders that we've, some of them or all of them potentially we've spoken to. So there is a pretty good list of vendors, and I think what we've noticed so far is those that may be ready to release a new meter and the technology related to it, which would enable potentially more customer direct interaction, and those that are on the last generation meter that would still do a lot, but maybe isn't going to carry it to the long term. And so we're really thinking deliberately about what serves our needs and the needs of our customers.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
On your vendor list, that gives me comfort, and I assume that was the case to be looking at reputable vendors, and while price is very important, it's not everything. It's not the end all. You don't want to be stranded with a system 10 years in that is no longer supported either. So sounds like that is the direction you're headed.
We're definitely on that path of just, there's a lot of, and some of the vendors offer different, their older meter and their newer meter both, and so it's a lift to kind of work our way through that, not just our project team, but organizationally as well.
Any other questions? Commissioner Fedorchuk, Commissioner Christman?
None for me.
No, sir.
Is there anything else you would like to add on your end, Joanne or Bryce or anyone else?
This is Bruce. I'll just say thank you for your questions, your engagement with this. We will, as we get some more of the economic information together, we'll make sure that we've got it all up to date. I know that question about what's on that revenue requirements graph and what's in our cost-benefit analysis, we want to make sure that those are reconciled, and so we'll make sure that we've got that clear and appropriate as we communicate with you and your staff moving forward. But really appreciate the engagement today.
Well, Bruce, I feel like you're the Wizard of Oz, just a voice and no face.
I'm at least as unimpressive if you've got to look behind the curtain. You'd be disappointed like Dorothy.
Well, thank you so much for the information. I thought it was very good, and as always, thank you for making it a little bit at least easier for myself to follow what you're doing. So enjoy Lake Country. It's getting to the tail end. What is it? Docs start coming out next week or a week and a half, believe it or not. So that's depressing. So we got to end on a higher note than that. Thank you again, and look forward to continuing the dialogue.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Really appreciate your time. Stay well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.